This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon. Welcome to the show. It's Health and Living, and I'm Meera Sivasodhi. Co-hosting today's show with me on public health and policies, Azrul Muhammad Khalib. And today we are discussing a public health issue, which all of us, many of us are concerned about, which is the idea of smoking. I think in the previous government, Dr. Zoll, the former Minister of Health, had come out and, very boldly made the move of not allowing smoking in public areas, in restaurants, and all of that. But somehow things have fallen through the cracks. And recently, Minister of Health Khairi Jamaluddin has sort of reinforced and he's come back to say that he would like to enforce this going forward. Now, we have been, Azrul, you and I have been speaking about smoking cessation. We've been talking about tobacco and vape and e-cigarettes and, heat not burn, technology and all of that. For years now, Azrul, for years. Why are we still sitting here talking about it? It's 2021.
Well, Meera, it's...
2022. It's a new year.
Well, it is, a form of addiction. And like all things that are addictive... kicking nicotine, especially, is something that everybody has who smokes as a personal demon, I think. And the demon comes up, and it threatens to take over your life. And to some extent, we don't see the struggle that a smoker goes through on a daily basis in trying to feed that beast, that demon of nicotine. And there's so many people who are courageously trying to kick the habit and, there have been really a lot of success stories, but there have also been so many that we know of that have failed and are continuing on. And I'm just concerned that the addiction now is being continued in the form of vape and e-cigarettes now that are being proposed.
Yeah, and we've also got younger people who are picking it up, right?
I mean, absolutely.
So despite decades of this public health education on the dangers of smoking, an estimated of 21% of Malaysians today, and that's about one in five people still smoke. So on top of that, we now have vaping, as you mentioned, to contend with as well, with more people picking it up as a new habit or as a way of, quitting the smoking habit or kicking the smoking habit. And we recently had an introduction of excise duties on e-cigarettes in Budget 2022. But does this mean e-cigarettes should be used as an alternative to cigarettes, or do we need to revisit the basics of smoking cessation strategies? Joining us also, Professor Dr. Muhammad Haniki Nik Muhammad. He's from the Kuliah of Pharmacy, International Islamic University of Malaysia, and also Chief Coordinator of Certified Smoking Cessation Service Provider. Welcome to the show, Professor. How are you today?
Good. Thank you so much for having me.
Professor, you run a smoking cessation clinic. You just want to share some insights on what your observations have been and, what's your take of this entire smoking cessation strategy that we have in Malaysia?
Thank you. It's indeed a struggle. I've been providing smoking cessation service for more than 15 years, almost 20 years, in fact. And we found that other than the physical dependence due to nicotine, as mentioned correctly just now, it is also the environment that we're having challenges with, because it's also a trigger for the smokers when they go out and they see other people smoking or having any behavior that mimics smoking, as in vaping or using e-cigarettes or heated tobacco products and whatnot. So this reinforcement creates a barrier for them to successful quitting. But we know that there are evidence suggesting both combination of behavior and pharmacological, which means that we combine intervention that deals with behavior component and also the medication component would yield the best results. So that's we're helping smokers to the best of our ability. But of course, the smokers themselves are actually doing majority of the work. We as trained health providers, we have the knowledge and skills to help them through being certified in smoking cessation service under the MQIP program, And then it's the smokers that need to have the problem-solving skills. And we know, for example, their roadblocks would include the withdrawal symptoms that they suffer or experience upon quitting. And listeners would have to realize that the addictiveness to nicotine is the nature of the nicotine itself, but it's the way that it is delivered through inhalations in the form of smoke or vapors through the respiratory systems that reach the sites of action in seconds. So this fast delivery and onset of action, along with the high concentration that reaches the target site, actually contribute to the dependence and the, what we call tobacco use disorder. So overcoming this is challenging. And on top of that, we have the environment, as I mentioned, that includes enforcement. So correctly mentioned just now, we've been seeing this problem for decades. And when we have regulations, rules, and laws, and whether it's imposed or not, that needs to be addressed adequately before we can see significant reduction in prevalence.
Okay. I like how you use tobacco use disorder rather than just the word addiction, right? I mean, you know, Professor, so the standard treatment that's offered to anyone who wants to quit smoking is either behavioral or pharmacological. Am I correct?
Correct. We offer both. For adults, definitely 18 and above, we can offer them medications available, approved based on safety and efficacy for smoking cessation, which we have in the market. We don't have a whole range of medications as in some developed countries, but at least we have medication, two types of medication, nicotine-based and non-nicotine-based. The nicotine component in the medications, they are delivered in a slower manner and in lower concentration. And therefore, this differs than that to the nicotine delivered by tobacco products. So the dependence from such products is very little, less than 3%, as compared to the addictiveness caused by nicotine delivered by tobacco products.
Okay, that's interesting. The UK and New Zealand, they have adopted the use of e-cigarettes as a smoking cessation tool. And others like Thailand and Singapore have completely banned it. But I always wondered, because Malaysia was in between, right? We didn't really regulate e-cigarettes in the past. Yet, you know, we had vape shops and we had, you know, the thing available, which, you know, it's just sent confusing messages to everyone. Is it banned or is it not banned? Is it okay to use or is it not okay to use, right? I mean, Azrul, what was your take on it?
Well, honestly, Mira, I'm more of the Thailand and Singapore school of thought when it comes to e-cigarettes and vaping, because, you know, it's never been really decisively proven through studies that vapor e-cigarettes is an effective smoking cessation tool in comparison to like nicotine replacement therapy products, you know, where you have gum, you have patches, and in some countries, sprays, where you can basically have, since the 70s, you know, data that demonstrates over, what, 300 clinical studies, 40 years of real-world experience showcasing the safety and efficacy of these approaches for smokers who are wanting to quit. And right now, what we are looking at is somehow giving up on these existing approaches, or what we call NRTs, the nicotine replacement therapy products, and moving on to something that has not yet been proven as a way to, one, supposedly reduce harm, and B, as a way to quit smoking, which is quite erroneous here. And what we, well, at least my personal belief here, is that we are actually shifting from one form of addiction for nicotine to another form. And it was quite disappointing to hear in the budget last year that the government had decided to basically accept that we were going to have e-cigarettes and vape in Malaysia, and that we were going to regularize it by basically, you know, making sure that it was going to be available legally and be able to be taxed. Yeah. And there are so many problems, Mira. You cannot believe the the variety of issues here that we will only begin to see once this becomes available on market. Right now, before it's even legalized and taxed, you already see a lot of problems, and they're not going to be solved simply by making it a legal product.
Yeah, I think we're conflicted. We're conflicted from a health perspective. We're also conflicted from a business angle, from a business aspect. And I think we also have a problem where we have different ministries involved in this. I think the Ministry of Health is quite clear that this is not something that they want. I think in the past that's been made very clear. However, there's something else that's going on behind on the back end of all of this. But you know, you say that it's erroneous. The data is not quite there. Would you agree, Professor Haneke? I mean, is it really? Are you saying that the UK and New Zealand are, you know, actually sort of promoting smoking cessation, e-cigarettes and all of that based on data that's not correct?
Ah, okay. To a certain extent, Azro is correct by saying that there are certain data that have been put out there that can be misleading. And we have seen it very early on when the UK published the Public Health England report, the first one. And we were then exposed to the fact that at least one of the authors for that report had direct affiliation with tobacco industry. So we know that has been influenced from the tobacco industry from the first report. But since then, we know also there had been certain several randomized control trials, RCTs. This is considered the highest level of scientific study level. So, but it is still considered far and in between. We don't have that many. We have a few. So to say that we have good evidence, no, we don't have that. Even the Cochrane review from last year that was released, when everybody was waiting for this, for Cochrane reviews to come out. And when it did come out, the author's conclusions were that we have moderate level evidence to support the use of e-cigarettes in certain circumstances, whereby there were more smokers who managed to quit with nicotine-containing electronic cigarettes compared to NRT. But still, the issues of optimization. People commented, for example, we know the best results from treatment of smokers would be combination therapy, not only from behavior plus medication, but the medications themselves. If you use monotherapy, meaning that one single agent, as opposed to combining two types of medication, whether it's an RT combination, for example, the gum and the patch, as Azro mentioned, or even the non-nicotine base, we have the varenicline, the generic name for the product, with another NRT, can also yield higher results. So more and more evidence showing effectiveness of medications which are already proven safe and effective. Now, the issue with e-cigarettes, although they managed to help some smokers, I do not deny that we have data that they help smokers quit. However, we still don't have the long-term safety data because, hey, it's a relatively new phenomenon as compared to data from studies on NRT and whatnot. So given time is not on their side, we don't know the long-term harmful effects. But remember, EVALI erupted in 2019. EVALI, if you know, is the electronic cigarettes and vaping associated lung injuries. And this actually resulted in death and permanent destruction to the respiratory system, particularly the lungs, in those who use e-cigarettes. And these reports actually consolidated the fact that although the proponent of e-cigarettes are saying that it can be used for smoking cessation, but it is not harmless. Yeah, to the very least, we need to understand that whatever being put into e-cigarettes, whether it's the nicotine, whether it's the flavoring agents or the humidifiers like propylene glycol or vegetable glycerin, these are not meant to be inhaled. Our lungs are meant to inhale fresh air containing oxygen and then expire or expel out gases like carbon dioxide, not meant to inhale lychee or bandung syrup or watermelon.
Teh tarik
or what have you. You can't drink and have food containing all these flavoring agents, because they go through another system, the gastrointestinal tract, but not meant for respiratory tract. So they can be irritants, they can evoke processes of inflammation, they can start process of carcinogenesis, they can in the long term even cause cancer, cardiovascular problems on top of respiratory. It's a matter of time when researchers will be able to associate more and more diseases with e-cigarettes, as they have done with combustible tobacco. Or conventional cigarettes, tobacco, because it took more than 20 years, almost 30 years, to have a definite association between smoking and lung cancer. So we should not wait for another 30 years or so before we say, oh, e-cigarettes dangerous, so let's ban it. By that time, it will be too late. Once you have recognized the industry as legitimate, it's very difficult to go back retrospectively and pull them out from the market, as we have seen with the tobacco industry. I am actually very, stunned, for lack of better words, when the budget was announced by the government that they're going to tax e-cigarettes, whereas e-cigarettes are illegal products, because they, by definition, contain nicotine, and nicotine is regulated under the Poisons Act 1952, which stipulate that only licensed health professionals can dispense or sell nicotine-containing products, just like the NRT. So with the indication of helping people quit smoking. Now, the current stand of the government is a bit, again, confusing to me, because if they're saying these e-cigarettes are meant for smoking cessation, as correctly mentioned by Mira just now, like New Zealand and other countries, when they say these are meant for smoking cessation, and they would regulate it as such. So they would look at their own regulations and laws to accommodate the dispensing, the prescribing, everything. But in Malaysia, I don't think the current Minister of Health is going to regulate e-cigarettes for smoking cessation. It's going as leisure products. Okay. So it's going to be sold for leisure purposes. And this creates a huge problem from the public health perspective, because it renormalizes smoking. Although it's vaping, but the act is similar to smoking. Yeah. Yeah, you see people inhaling and blowing out vapes. So this is going backwards. I would say three steps backwards than all the progress that had been done. If the Ministry of Health is adamant on following the evidence adopted by such countries, they need to regulate e-cigarettes under the Poisons Act, meaning that they're going to have to produce the pro forma, the documentations, the studies, the data, the evidence to the relevant ministries, the agencies at the Ministry of Health, or for example, Drug Control Authority, the National Pharmaceutical Regulatory Agency, so that they can view this evidence and then decide whether e-cigarettes are really effective and safe for smoking cessation. Until then, it cannot be sold in Malaysia. So whatever being sold right now in Malaysia, and since ever it had hit our shore, they are still illegal products.
Right. Azrul, would you agree?
Well, you know, one of the things, Mira, that you mentioned just now, there are other factors behind it as well, right? And the reality is the economics of it is the main draw here. Malaysia is one, if not the biggest exporter of vape products in the world. And I think a lot of people, especially the government, wants a piece of the action line in terms of revenue. We're looking at ways to get more money, right? And this is from one that is, and as mentioned by Prof. Haniki just now, an illegal industry. They want to make it legal. Okay, fine. This is what they think they want to do, and this is how they decided. But think about it, yeah. One of the main reasons that has been used to justify this approach has been supposedly this is a way for people to quit smoking. Now, people think that if you go from smoking tobacco, a cigarette, you can seamlessly switch to vape or e-cigarette. And for many people, it's not a linear or straightforward relationship. Very often, what the vape industry does not talk about is dual use, where people both smoke cigarettes and smoke vape. And instead of replacing one addiction with another, you actually now have basically two types of, in two different manifestations of nicotine addiction. It's not solving a problem. And if you speak to a public health practitioner, their views are similar to what you hear from Prof. Haniki here, is that we're not solving the problem. We're not helping smokers to quit. You know, the pathway to quit is not through e-cigarettes. It's through some of the proven time-tested methods which have been shown to work, which is using nicotine replacement therapy products. But the issue here is really about access, you know, Mira, and this is something that Prof. Haniki mentioned just now. It is quite limited. You know, people find it hard to access many of these products that are needed to help them to quit smoking because it is bound by regulations. You know, you go to the pharmacy, you have to sign in a book, you have to write your name, put your IC number. Some places you've got to get a prescription. It's equivalent to trying to get a contraceptive pill for a woman. So if you imagine trying to go to the pharmacy and doing that just to get a gum or a nicotine patch, you might give up before you even walk to the pharmacy. So yeah. What we need to address really, if you want to really help smokers to quit, we really need to improve access to these sort of proven methods of smoking cessation, not through regularizing vape, you know. And this is where I think the government is making a pragmatic approach to this issue, you know, that it really is a huge industry. There are so many people, businesses doing this, and it's decided that we are not going to make it illegal, we're going to make it legal, and we're going to tax them. Yeah. But here's the thing, it's not that simple. There are two types of systems that we should talk about. One is the closed system, and the one is the open system. So if you want to tax, it might be easy to tax the closed system because that's through a manufacturing process, it goes through a factory, and so forth. But what do you do about the open systems where somebody can just mix, you know, a mixologist can just bancho at the back of a stall, you nak apa, teh chrysanthemum or air bandung or syrup or, you know, kind of flavor and 5%. Well, why start at 5% nicotine? Why not put there 10% nicotine? Where is the control for that? And that's going to be the problem there because nicotine is a poison. It is toxic if taken more beyond a certain dose. So how do you control that? We could have cases of people poisoned due to illicit products. And what are we going to do about that then? So I think there are a lot of problems here that we're just beginning to unpeel when it comes to legalizing vape and e-cigarettes. I think Singapore and Thailand did the right approach when it comes to this issue, but now we are taking on this approach. We will have to deal with the consequences.
Okay. We'll come back and discuss New Zealand. I mean, they just announced a total ban on cigarettes and tobacco smoking. I don't know how that is going to work out. We'll come back and get your thoughts on that. If you have a question, give us a call. It's 7733 2900. You can WhatsApp 018-789-8899 or tweet us at BFM Radio. We're discussing smoking cessation plans here in Malaysia. We have a question, a comment from Kevin very quickly. He says, after 7 years of smoking, I quit through nicotine gum, it really works. But I believe it starts with the desire to quit. So I think Professor Haneke would be able to relate to that. We'll come back and continue this discussion up next on BFM 89.9. Good afternoon and welcome back. It's Health and Living. I'm Meera Sivasodhi. Co-hosting with me, Azrul Muhammad Khalib. We're discussing smoking cessation here in Malaysia. Everything from tobacco-related products, in relation to smoking cessation. Also joining us, Professor Dr. Muhammad Haneke Nik Muhammad. He's from the Kuliah of Pharmacy, International Islamic University, Malaysia, and Chief Coordinator of Certified Smoking Cessation Service Provider. Very enlightening, I have to say. But let's just move on to New Zealand. I mean, they very boldly just announced in January that they're going to ban cigarettes and tobacco smoking. Now, what's your take on that, Azrul? What do you think?
Well, New Zealand's a great country to see in terms of progressive health policies, and we've seen that in terms of COVID response. And now with this total ban on cigarettes for people born after a certain year is quite bold and ambitious, and definitely something that Malaysia should consider. I know it's going to be quite controversial. A lot of people will object to that, but I think it's a serious move if we're really talking about wanting to achieve the goals of creating a smoke-free generation. And it actually literally is a generation of people that we want to make sure don't smoke. So New Zealand doesn't just have one tool in its toolbox for smoking cessation. It also have these things that are available over-the-counter, OTC. We mentioned just now extensively about nicotine replacement therapy products. They are available over-the-counter. So it doesn't require that you get a prescription or be told that you have to write your name in a book and so forth. It's just like buying chewing gum at 7-Eleven, and they make it possible with clinics such as like Prof. Haneke runs, for smokers who are trying to achieve the objective of full cessation or total freedom from tobacco and nicotine to be able to achieve the objective. So it's a whole ecosystem. I think Prof. Haneke mentioned it earlier just now, right? It's the enabling environment. Make that possible for smokers to actually see a future where they can quit smoking. And I think New Zealand is now embarking on an ambitious experiment to actually make that a reality, not just for people born up to a certain age, but pretty much for everyone. It's literally a total ban of cigarettes up to a certain point. So it's quite interesting to see, and I do hope the government stays in power.
Professor Haneke, what did you think? I mean, would you agree with Azrul about some of the concerns? I mean, the fact that, a lot of these cessation therapies are not available easily. I mean, it's, as you said, make everything over the counter. It's easy, it's accessible. What do you think?
I have to, based on evidence, because when we look at availability, whether it's as OTC or in some countries as prescribed medications, and luckily in Malaysia, because it's regulated under Group C poison, it doesn't require any prescription. So you can just walk in and then request it from the pharmacy or GPs or clinics. And you know that there are so many community pharmacies and clinics in Malaysia. I mean, next to each other, you may have two or three clinics and pharmacies. So it's not probably not that. Maybe the price could be one thing, although we know quitting is cost effective. And even if you factor in multiple use of medications and also behavioral intervention, it's still cost effective because smoking causes more than 20 diseases, and more than 20,000 Malaysians die every year from smoking-related diseases. So quitting at any time is beneficial. So whether you can get it from any system, it should be helpful. On the economic side, from smoking, we know that because of the devastation and the diseases from diseases and deaths caused by smoking, our country is not reaping any benefits from the excise duties or tax. In fact, we are losing because the cost that we generated from taxation is so much less than the cost required to treat the diseases caused by smoking. And I presume it will be the same with e-cigarettes. If you want to treat e-vali, that can be a huge chunk out of the Ministry of Health budget. It can be 10 to 100,000 Malaysian ringgit for one case of e-vali, because the person would require to stay in the ICU before transferred to the ward, and then later for lifelong supply of treatment, including oxygen. So we can imagine the cost. So, but the mind-boggling part is, we know from the FCTC, Framework Convention on Tobacco Control, from the WHO, the empower strategies, that the most effective, or at least the top two most effective strategies for tobacco control would be raising the price of cigarettes through taxation, raising the price, and then making sure that the tax component is more than 65 to 70% is what not implemented in Malaysia for the since 2015.
Yeah.
We have not had a budget table that increased the cigarette tax since 2015. That actually is a very strong indication how much the tobacco industry interference into the government. That's a clear interference, because by not raising tax, the cigarette price is affordable to many Malaysians.
You know, as
and
well.
At the same, yeah.
Yeah, sorry. So, carry on.
Sorry. And at the same time, corruption that leads to smuggling or illicit cigarettes is rampant. In fact, even the tobacco industry, tobacco companies are saying Malaysia is a haven for illicit cigarettes. If 60%, they're quoting this from their own studies of the cigarettes in the market, are illicit products. So in order to have illicit products, we definitely have to ensure our borders are better controlled. And due to corruption, this has not been able, to be addressed adequately. So by addressing cigarette price through taxation, and also the second strategy, expanding smoke-free areas, then we can control tobacco better in making progress towards the end game by 2040. That's the target, 2040, to have prevalence of smokers less than 5%. So if we were really serious, then this should be the measures to be taken. And of course, New Zealand has gone to the highest level of expanding the areas of smoke-free areas by declaring the whole country, making it smoke-free, just like countries before this, like Ireland, that kicked off this process. Malaysia has several states or territories that we have declared as smoke-free. We know Malacca, Penang, Johor, and a few states, but it's still not a smoke-free country.
Yeah.
So we need to beef up our strategies before we talk about whether we want to declare ourselves and whatnot. So. Yeah. Yeah.
And, you know, Johor did say they wouldn't allow the sale of vape and e-cigarettes. Is that still the case, Azrul? Would you know?
It's probably not the case anymore. Once they normalize or regularize this, it's going to be available nationwide. But, you know, Mira, Profaniki, I really want to go back to one of the points that was raised at the very beginning of this, which was the fact that, you know, quitting is hard.
Yep.
And that's the reality of it, right? And we can't, I honestly don't know how you handle it, Prof, over at your clinic, you know, because you have to counsel, you have to give support. It's a continuous process. And, you know, there's estimates, Mira, that it would take smokers at least 30 attempts, and relapses are very, very high, and it's expected to some extent. And eliminating cigarettes is only the first step towards smoking cessation. But get this, you know, we find that people who smoke electronic cigarettes and vape find themselves also wanting to quit, and they're struggling to quit. So today we have basically cigarette smoking cessation clinics that run by Prof Haniki. Tomorrow you could be having vape and e-cigarettes clinics where you're trying to address the problem of addiction in a different form. And
We are already addressing that. Because we have dual users, as you correctly mentioned, and then we tackle cigarettes first, and then we then tackle e-cigarettes.
How successful do you think you've been at the clinic, Professor?
Our success rate is about 30%, but we know that from literature, any quit rate of above 20% is considered exceptional. That's how difficult to get people to quit smoking.
Yeah. So you might as well not allow it, right? I mean, why even go down the path when it's going to be so difficult? But it sounds so easy. It's so easy to say, right? But so difficult to actually deal with.
Without the political will, we're going to face this forever and ever.
Yes, and it's a lot of income for government. But you made a good point, Professor Haneke, that a lot of that money, actually, if you think about it, goes into treating people with tobacco-related diseases. And it is not funny. I mean, smoking has been... And the thing is, sometimes directly you cannot make that link to whether or not smoking did in fact affect, besides lung cancer. If you ask anyone now, any doctor, they will say, for every disease, smoking is a risk factor, right? But so until we come to terms with that, it's going to be quite difficult. Azra, where do you think we should start from a public health policy perspective? Is policy needed at all? Or what is it that we actually need to sort this out?
Well, I think one thing we have to do, honestly, is to take a stock take of our current strategies concerning smoking cessation and to see where it has succeeded and where it has failed and be honest about it. And most importantly, I think we need to be able to address the issues of access and affordability, what Prof. Haneke mentioned just now, with regards to our existing methods of cessation. And the fact of the matter here is that we do not want to, by regularizing or normalizing electronic cigarettes and vape, that we are creating another problem. And that's the problem I'm seeing right now. If I could quote to you, Mira, a study that was done amongst university students in Malaysia, six universities, it found that 74% of the respondents actually smoked e-cigarettes, 40% used both cigarettes and e-cigarettes, and 34.5% were exclusive e-cigarette users. So we are seeing this amongst university students. But here's the thing. People are starting to vape and use e-cigarettes at much younger ages now. At even secondary school level, we are seeing them adopting the habit. And arguably, it is a possible gateway towards cigarette smoking. So we need to have a look at our policies concerning tobacco and see how realistic they are. And most importantly, be, as mentioned by Prof. Haneke just now, to have the political will to make some of the decisive policy decisions, such as what's been done in New Zealand. However, I do want to caution, though, that we do not look at vape or e-cigarettes as a way for smoking cessation. It isn't. We need to instead look at things like nicotine replacement therapy products, which do not create or transfer or continue dependence on nicotine, because that's what it does with vape and e-cigarettes. So this is something that we need to be able to look at. So if the government has decided to regularize this, then it's something that we need to accept, perhaps. But we need to be able to also strongly support the existing methods of smoking cessation, such as the clinics that Prof. Haneke is mentioning right now. Okay. It is expected the size of the industry in Malaysia, Yamira, is 3 billion. So I would argue, give some of that 3 billion, once you tax it, give some of that money to support smoking cessation efforts, because the objective here is to quit smoking, not extend the nicotine addiction.
Okay. We have a question here from Muhammad Chani Abdullah. It's more a comment, and I'm going to pose this to you, Professor Haneke. Professor Muhammad Shani says, quitting hard is a lame reason. Smokers can actually refrain a day during Puasa month. So what is it then? You know, why is it they can refrain from, you know, smoking during the fasting month? And so why is that so difficult to then quit? I'm sure you see tons of this, right?
Yes, yes. We know that motivation is a factor that can help smokers quit or at least abstain for certain hours from smoking. And Ramadan is a great example of that because, one, it creates a total 180 degrees environment where majority of Muslims are not smoking, at least during the daytime. And then there's no food. There's no eating, there's no drinking. And we know this eating and drinking are what you call strong triggers for smoking because they reinforce smoking. For example, if they drink coffee or tea, they would smoke. They eat something, they would smoke to double or triple their pleasure. So when there's no drinking, no eating, and the environment is more conducive in the sense that you don't see people smoking, you don't smell the cigarette or tobacco smoke. So it creates this. And plus, the level of piousness seemed to increase among the Muslim during this month. So they believe this is and they have no time. Imagine, you know, from the breaking of fast, they will have to perform so many prayers and then they're tired and at night they sleep early, they will have to wake up and they have little time. So I guess for smokers, one of the things that can be done is to fast 365 days and see how it goes. But at least intermittent fasting is good. But let me get on a more serious note. Do note that the main players who are going to benefit from e-cigarettes would be the tobacco industry themselves. Why? Because they are also the manufacturers of e-cigarettes brands. They have jumped on the bandwagon of saying if we can't beat them, we join them. They have been buying the small e-cigarette companies the very earlier on, and then they invested in making their own products on top of whatever tobacco products that they have on top of the cigarettes. And they're going under the disguise of smoke-free world. They're saying, let's get people to stop smoking, start switching, and so on. But as Azra mentioned, this is not harm reduction. This is harm creation. And we know from studies that people who use both cigarette and e-cigarettes, either they end up as dual users for an extended period or they remain on e-cigarettes for an extended period of time. As compared to when we treat smokers, we usually treat them for 3 to 6 months. So we have the clinical practice guidelines, we have the evidence, we have the studies to back up our practice. But who's going to know how many years can you treat smokers with e-cigarettes? Because if they remain on e-cigarettes for years, it just goes to show that they are addicted to the nicotine delivered from e-cigarettes and they're just maintaining the smoking activity, although they are vaping. But to the untrained eyes or people who are looking, this is like renormalizing smoking. And one of the other issues, a big issue that I have, as mentioned by Ezra, is the open system that's going to be allowed. It also allows substance abuse. We know in many countries, they have added substances of abuse. In Malaysia, we know that they have been selling ganja, THC, and other products. And this actually, THC and vitamin E acetate are at least the two culprits in terms of chemicals that have been associated with EVALI. So it's a matter of time that we're going to have an explosion of EVALI in Malaysia. We already have seen these cases. We are underdiagnosing it for sure. And with proper diagnosing, we are going to see more. On the last note that I can share is that we already have the national strategic planning. Everything is good on paper. We are members and signatories, parties to the WHO FCTC. These are evidence-based from the empower, the monitoring, the protecting, and then MPOO, offering cessation or help to smokers to quit. E enforce all the regulations and legislation, and R is raising of tax. The weakest link in Malaysia, as from my personal point of view, is the O, offering of help. This is very lacking. We are good at monitoring. We can report our prevalence of smoking among adults and adolescents for three decades have been stagnant, about the same, 4 to 5 million among adults, increasing among adolescents, or reducing a bit, but still quite many, as mentioned earlier. We're good at warning people, although many things more can be done. We can look at plain packaging, but the raising of tax, the protecting of non-smokers from secondhand smoke exposure, there's still a lot more can be done. But the offering of help is the weakest in terms of our implementation. We have on paper many quit smoking clinics. We have many facilities. The government is trying very hard. They have launched the public private partnership under the MQuit service program. This is where pharmacists coming in and also nurses and physicians to support the quit smoking. You can go to My Sejahtera, or this one I have to congratulate the Ministry of Health. Under the My Sejahtera app, you can go to the to more, and then you can look for resources on quitting. So you can register to jomquit.my, and then you can get the help that you need in order to quit. Because remember, smoking also increases risk of getting COVID-19, because it also creates the opportunity for the virus SARS-CoV-2 to lash on due to overexpression on the lung surface from nicotine use through inhalation of smoke and vapors. So both smoking and e-cigarettes can increase the risk to COVID-19. And once you get COVID-19, if you are a smoker, the complications is higher and death risk is higher. So my advice to all the smokers and vapors there, quit as soon as possible, get help, register to jomquit.my, use your My Sejahtera app, and then reap the benefits as quickly as possible.
That is fantastic. Thank you so very much. I have to say, I walked into this interview thinking I was on the fence that, you know, e-cigarettes and vape and all of that were indeed the lesser of two evils. I'm coming out of it convinced. Totally
you
convinced.
You can say it's That's a lesser great. Of two evils, but it's still evil.
It is
Remember,
evil.
It's still
yes.
evil.
But I'm convinced now, you know, it is evil. So, gentlemen, thank you. That was so informative. Prof Haneke, thank you so much for joining us today. And as Azrul Muhammad Khalib, my co-host, Professor Dr. Muhammad Haneke Nik Muhammad from the Kuliah Pharmacy, International Islamic University, Malaysia, and Chief Coordinator of Certified Smoking Cessation Service Provider. Thank you so much, sir. We'll see you again. We'll definitely work
Thank
more
you
with
for
you.
Having me.
Thank you very much.
Thanks, Mira.
No problem. This is BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.